You had one job, Warner Brothers. You had one job. Just take my childhood heroes and make a good movie out of them. And you blow it! It's Free For All Friday. Let's take a closer look.
Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Face forward, true believers. Excelsior. That's my throw out, of course, to all of our Marvel fans in the audience, but I can also have some DC stuff to throw out as well. It is Free For All Friday, and if you couldn't figure it out here on the Council of Trent podcast, we're going to talk about Marvel versus DC, specifically at the movies. I'm your host, Trent Horn, Catholic apologist and speaker, and on Fridays, I like to cut loose, take a break from theology, apologetics, all important topics, but we got other days of the week to talk about that. Here, I just want to talk about a few other things that I find incredibly interesting, and from my perspective and in my life, you might find them interesting as well. And if you'd like to hear, of course, more content like this, get even more insights from me, do check out our podcast premium subscribers page at trenthornpodcast.com for $5 or $10 a month. You can get all access to these kinds of interviews, write-ups, articles, MP3s, and for $10 a month, you can get a wonderful t-shirt with my lovely mug on the front of it. So go and check that out at trenthornpodcast.com. But now let's get into the meat of the matter. I've been meaning to talk about this for a while, but I am a comic book buff. You can see myself and Jimmy Akin walking around here at the office with our different comic book t-shirts on. I usually have a lot more DC comic logos on my shirts, though I am a fan of sporting Marvel paraphernalia as well. I just actually got a Black Panther t-shirt not too long ago. So I've had thoughts for a while now over the past few years about seeing my comic book favorites, titles and stories up on the big screen at the movie theaters. And it's so interesting to see where things have changed, because there was a time back in cinematic history when superhero films were just box office poison. I mean, they could not do well at all. I mean, there were some properties that did decently well. I mean, I think Blade would be one from the 90s that comes to mind. But Marvel was really out on a limb. They were in trouble, actually. So Marvel comic sales were really declining back in the late 90s, and Marvel Comics was thought about filing for bankruptcy and selling off most of their products and licensing and things like that, just to try to get back up into the black. And so one of the people that was brought in to try to turn the company around, they had licensed some of their characters. I think like X-Men, for example, went over to Fox to make the X-Men series. And those were incredibly successful. I mean, it's amazing to me. There was a break. You know, you had superhero movies. You had the 1989 Michael Keaton Batman. And then before that, the Christopher Reeve Superman films, which were amazing and brought superheroes into the spotlight. Yet it could not be duplicated again from those movies. I mean, the Superman sequels, especially, oh gosh, Superman 3 with Richard Pryor. They, you know, brought in Richard Pryor as the comedy relief, and it was horrible. Not as bad as Superman 4, where Superman is fighting Nuclear Man. And then I think they're Lois Lane or someone is on the moon with them and they're fighting and she can breathe somehow on the moon. And then Superman looks at the Great Wall of China and rebuilds it with his eyes. Ugh. Anyways, and then, of course, there are the Batman movies. Don't get me started on where those declined in the 90s. The worst one, of course, being Batman and Robin. And as a kid, I liked that movie, but that's because I was a kid and children like things that are terrible. And that movie was made for someone like me who wanted action figures. But then as I got older and looked back on it, I'm like, oh no, the Bat credit card, Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. Even then I realized that was not nearly as good as the Batman animated series, in the early 90s that I loved, which by the way are amazing. I have them on DVD. I am eagerly waiting for my oldest son, Matthew, to be old enough to see them, but I might not show them to him until he's like 10. Because those old Batman, the animated series cartoons, they're actually intense for little kids. But that's good. You shouldn't talk down to kids or treat them like they're idiots or something like that. So I want to give the backstory here, because Marvel was really in a lurch. And then later, one of the consultants, I think it was the new president that was brought into the company, said, look, why don't you just do your own studio? Instead of licensing the characters out, you're barely making any money on this. Make your own studio. But the problem was Marvel said, oh, well, we licensed out our really, really good characters. You know, we gave away Spider-Man, for example. We don't own the rights to it. Don't own the rights to X-Men. So they just took up their B characters and thought, all right, we'll we'll make our own movies starring these people. And so that began with the first movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Iron Man, which was, I remember when it came out, the buzz, and when I sat through and I saw it, yes, this is a superhero movie. This is a movie with an arc, with a character and a hero that's realistic, but not too gritty, that has everything that you would want. And it was a perfect casting choice to have Robert Downey Jr. play Tony Stark. Because, you know, there's kind of a little bit of life imitating art here. Because prior to that, the most scenes that Robert Downey Jr. was doing, I think, were like in a rehab center or a jail cell. I remember there's an old joke on The Simpsons. They're visiting a Hollywood studio lot and they're driving by in the tram. And Marge says, "Hey, look, everyone, Robert Downey Jr. is filming a shootout with the police." And Lisa says, "Wait a minute, where are the cameras?" So remember all that. But Iron Man was a huge success. And what made it a success, really, what put it into people's minds was the post-credit scene involving Samuel Jackson. And he gets there and he says, "I am Iron Man. You're part of a larger universe, Mr. Stark. You just don't know it yet." Doing my best Samuel L. Jackson there. "I'm tired of these monkey-fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday airplane." If you saw the movie Snakes on a Plane, the famous line to Samuel L. Jackson gets mangled a bit to make it safe for television with the profanity taken out. So from there, that introduced the idea, of course, of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then you had the follow-ups. You had Incredible Hulk, which was okay. Thor, which was decent. Captain America, the First Avenger, was really laying the groundwork. But all that, when that culminated in 2012 with the movie with Avengers, I remember going to see this and I just thought to myself, I've never seen a movie like this. You had four previous movies building up these characters, and now they're all here, crossed over. I hadn't been that excited since, you know, in the animated series that I watched, like animated Spider-Man, for example, way back in the 90s, there was a Secret Wars episode of Spider-Man, which included a crossover with Captain America, with some of the X-Men. I was like, this is awesome! Like, when you're a kid, crossovers are the most amazing thing. I think one thing I really loved, there was this movie that was put out, oh man, I cannot remember it, but it was an anti-marijuana film starring like all of the 90s cartoons put together. I mean, it had some of the Muppets in it, had Alvin the Chipmunks. I think George Bush did the intro for that. And as a kid, I did not care about the drug message. I just thought, oh my gosh, they're all here in one place. This is amazing. And so 2012 Avengers tapped into that for me. And Marvel has just gotten better and better and better at getting their properties, including a lot of these B-list properties. I mean, before the movies came out, you as the listener, I'd say 9 out of 10 of you, had you ever heard of the Guardians of the Galaxy? Had you ever heard of Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme? No, you didn't. But Marvel figured out just the goal and how to tell a really good story. And yet, when you when you go back and look at that, it's amazing to see that, how they took kind of these B-list characters at Marvel and created this Marvel Cinematic Universe, this machine. It's not without its flaws. And by the way, if I have to pick between Marvel and DC, just comics and heroes and characters, I actually kind of prefer DC. I love the DC Comics pantheon. It kind of reminds me of the gods of ancient Greek mythology, like these superpowered beings who have these larger-than-life battles, you know, with cosmic consequences. That's for something like, of course, Green Lantern and Superman. But, you know, Batman is a bit more down to earth. But it just has that different good versus evil quality that I've always liked in those characters. Whereas Marvel, the deal with Marvel comics usually focused on heroes, but their main problems weren't necessarily their antagonists. It was their own inner demons and problems that they were facing. Peter Parker's troubles at high school, or with Mary Jane, or as a newspaper reporter. The X-Men trying to survive, you know, bigotry and racism and prejudice in our society. Some of them get a bit overboard. I remember there was a Fantastic Four comic I was reading several years ago. And it opens, you know, there are 20,000 unemployed people waiting in line to receive their benefits at New York City. But today, on this Monday afternoon, that number will increase by 4. The idea is that the Fantastic Four somehow do not make enough money licensing their images and names enough. So now they're unemployed, kicked out of the Baxter Building, and trying to figure out how to get by. So some of the Marvel stuff I think is a bit much in regards. That's why I've always liked DC maybe just a little bit more, but I still have a great appreciation for all things Marvel. But in recent years, friends of the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, everyone listening, I am just baffled. I am baffled by how much DC comics are represented so poorly in movies. On television, they actually do pretty decently well. They're kind of cheesy shows, but I like Arrow. I like The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow. Legends are more, of course, some side characters from Arrow and Flash put together. But, you know, seeing these properties, they're Supergirl, like, they're not bad. I like them. They're decent passable. I really enjoy them. Sometimes they're a bit melodramatic. Sometimes they're a bit predictable, but they're fun and entertaining to watch. But my gosh, at the movies, unbelievable how bad they are. I think most of these movies, I didn't even bother to see in theaters. I remember I saw Justice League on an airplane and was barely able to make it through it on that flight, even though I literally had nothing else to do but watch this movie. Batman v Superman, I went and saw in theaters, and I thought that was a gigantic waste of $11 and 2 hours of my life. Suicide Squad, I later saw on television, renting it, and it's terrible. And I just can't believe this, that you have people who spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on these productions with some of the most iconic characters in comic book fiction and lore, and you get this stuff. I cannot believe it. So why is Marvel doing so well and DC does so terrible? This is my theory. It's Christopher Nolan's fault. Not his fault. I mean, he went and did his Batman trilogy, Batman Begins, Dark Knight, Dark Knight Returns. Dark Knight, of course, is the best of the bunch. Probably one of the best Batman films ever created. And what made it different, of course, from like Marvel was that it's not silly. The Dark Knight is not a superhero film. It's really more of a noir film or a crime thriller with, you know, Batman as a character in it. But if you notice the difference, Batman Begins, Gotham City is very much like the Gotham you see in the 1989 Batman, the Michael Keaton Batman. You know, it's like this kind of nightmarish world. In The Dark Knight, Gotham kind of just turns like into Chicago, basically. It's just your regular kind of metropolis. It's like a regular city where this stuff could really happen. And so people like that sense of realism that was put in place. Now, of course, there's lots of things in the movie that are totally unrealistic. One thing I still can't take seriously in the Nolan films is Christian Bale. I like his Bruce Wayne. I think he does a good job at that. I used to like Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne a little bit more, but Christian Bale's has grown on me. But my gosh, his Batman, his gravelly Batman voice. It is, "Where are the other drugs at? This is just how you do Batman. You have to really flare up the back of your voice because I'm the hero that Gotham needs. Now, you do this vibrato in my voice. I'm Batman." You don't have to do that. If you want to hear the best Batman voice, go back to Batman the Animated Series. Kevin Conroy is the voice actor there. He, to me, will always be the voice of Batman. It is truly amazing. Look up Kevin Conroy, C-O-N-R-O-Y, Kevin Conroy, Batman. The greatest Batman voice I've ever heard. But so I think that sense of, oh, we need to be gritty and realistic, and we're not like Marvel. Oh, silly Marvel, making jokes all the time. And Marvel does have a problem with that. Marvel movies have something called bathos. Bathos is a type of dramatic technique where you take something that a serious moment, and immediately after the serious moment, you tell a joke to try to lighten things. Marvel does that way, way, way too much. And that's definitely a problem. Like, you can't just have things be serious in Marvel movies just for a little bit. So that is one legitimate criticism I have. But my goodness, just DC. No, you can make a good movie, but it doesn't have to be completely dark and gritty at the expense of storytelling. It's easier storytelling. Beginning, middle, end. Characters that have actual motivations and reasons to do what they're doing. You follow a series of beats in the rising action, coming together, the first defeat, the regroup, moving to the second act, to the climax, and then the falling action. It's not that hard to hit those beats, and Marvel movies, as formulaic as you can call them, know how to hit those beats. But I think what happened with DC really was that you handed the reins over to people like Zack Snyder, and Snyder did 300. He's very good at making stylistic films that look cool, but he doesn't understand storytelling and characters, and especially Superman. Zack Snyder does not get Superman. He turns Superman into Mopey Man. being Superman is super hard. No one likes me. Superman is a figure of optimism. If you want to watch a great Superman movie in recent years, there's an animated movie that I really enjoy. It's called All-Star Superman. The comic is also, is of course, wonderful. But watch that animated film, All-Star Superman. It's about Superman foiling Lex Luthor, finding out that he's dying of solar radiation poisoning and coming to grips with his own mortality. But even with that grim premise, it is full of light and optimism and hope. So he just doesn't get it. And you see this in films like Batman v Superman, which just you watch it and you're like, this does not make sense. Why is Batman killing people? Why is he so mean to Batman in this regard? Why aren't they just sitting down and just talking through their differences to clear up a misconception before they start railing into one another? Well, I think what Snack Snyder did is that he read all the Frank Miller comic books, like The Dark Knight Returns, which is where Batman and Superman have fought all the time in comics, by the way. And Batman v Superman is drawn, I think, a lot from the Frank Miller comic from The Dark Knight Returns. But doesn't get the full meaning and lesson from these things. So when you see Batman v Superman, it's just so clumsy and put together in that way. To give you an example, when I was sitting there in the theater, you know, you have Batman there. Batman is fighting Superman, and Batman has Superman on the ropes, and he's about to kill Superman. And you wonder, wait, what's going to stop him from killing Superman? And the dopiest reason comes out of the screenwriters. At this point, Lex Luthor has kidnapped Superman's mother, Martha Kent. And so Superman says, "Save Martha." And Batman says, "You know, why did you say that name?" And Lois Lane's there and says, it's his mother's name. And then Batman breaks down because he realizes that Superman's mother is named Martha, and his mother, Martha Wayne, that his mom and Superman's mom have the same name. What? That is what you came up with for that twist. And you just see this clumsiness in here, just all coming together. Everything's rushed together so you can have a fight with Doomsday, which is the Death of Superman is an amazing comic. And Doomsday, this iconic villain from the Death of Superman, is wasted in Batman v Superman. I mean, I just can't believe it. And then, of course, you have Jesse Eisenberg, who is supposed to be a menacing Lex Luthor, but comes off as kind of like a weird mixture of the Joker and Daffy Duck. I'm like, who is directing this? What is happening here? And I was just shaking my head. And when I came out of the theaters, I told a friend, we were laughing about the Martha scene in Batman v Superman. And I said, here, right off the top of my head, I know how to make that better, how you could have made that scene in Batman v Superman better. How can you not find anyone to do that? Here's my fix of that infamous Martha scene in Batman v Superman. All right. First, you start at the beginning of Batman versus Superman, and they did the standard, let's do the montage of Bruce Wayne's parents being killed, even though everybody knows the story. Why do you need to do it again? Why? I know why. Do it again, but this time have Thomas Wayne and the mugger fighting. Thomas Wayne gets shot, and then Martha Wayne gets in front of Bruce and says, please don't hurt my son. And then she tries to go for the gun, and the mugger shoots Martha Wayne. And then Bruce is left there because, you know, the guy hears a police siren and he runs off. And there is Bruce Wayne with his deceased parents. Standard opening, I know. Then later on, you have Batman fighting Superman. And, of course, you'd have to fix the script up so it actually makes sense as to why they're fighting, that they're really coming to blows because they have different ideologies about how to deal with evil in the world, that it's not just some stupid miscommunication. Because Batman and Superman have a real and close friendship. Just sometimes, you know, they differ about how to accomplish the good. So a great example, of course, is as to how you could have a story like this where two good characters can come to odds at one another is in, surprise, surprise, Marvel Civil War, where Captain America and Iron Man face off, which, hey, this sounds kind of familiar. You have a billionaire tech genius who fights, you know, who has all these gadgets to help him fight and believes in, you know, doesn't believe in the good of humanity and, you know, is kind of more cynical. And then you have an optimistic guy in red, white, and blue who stands for hope and doesn't want to go down that same route, so they come to blows with one another. Huh. That's kind of what's supposed to be the story in Batman v Superman. But while it's realistic in Marvel Civil War, You don't get that in Batman v Superman. So they come together and they fight in Batman v Superman, all right? Then Batman has got Superman on the ropes. Batman's got one last weapon as a weapon of last resort. Superman is down, but he seems like he's getting back up. And Batman has a kryptonite gun, like a revolver with kryptonite bullets in it. And he takes it out and he's you know, shuffling over to Superman because he's been hurt in this fight. And he takes out his gun. And he's ready to end Superman's life because he believes he truly is a threat to the world. And but at that point, for reasons we figure out in the script, maybe Lois Lane is the one who goes and saves Martha Kent from Lex Luthor. Hey, progress there, you know, girl power. I see, I'm not against having women in films. I thought Wonder Woman was great, for example. So let's say you do that. And then Batman is about to shoot Superman with a kryptonite gun. And then Martha Kent runs in, gets between the two of them, puts her body over an injured Superman, and Batman says, get out of the way, I have to end this. And Martha Kent looks at him and says, please don't hurt my son. And at that moment, Batman starts to have the break. He looks down, he sees a boy whose mother is shielding over him, and he's standing there with a gun pointed at someone's mother. And at that moment, Batman realizes in his quest to do good, he has become everything he chose to fight against. And he completely breaks at that moment and drops his gun, and they come to resolve with one another. Would that be so hard to come up with? It took me literally 10 minutes to figure that, to think of that scene when I left the movie theater. And yet you have Batman v Superman, and you can't, it feels like there are eight writers here trying to do this. What is happening? I'll tell you what happens. Two words. Studio interference. Like when you look at Marvel films and things have gone poorly, it's almost always because, you know, the studios interfere and, you know, demand certain things. Although this is really prevalent for, in the Marvel films, when the studio interferes and things go wrong, in Avengers Age of Ultron, the studio basically demanded that they put in that weird scene where Thor goes to the cave and has a vision about Thor, Ragnarok, and the Infinity Stones. And basically, Joss Whedon was working on Age of Ultron. The studio came to Whedon and said, look, we want the Thor scene in the cave to promote the future movies. And Whedon says, that makes no sense in the narrative. I don't want it in there. And they said, okay, you know that farmhouse scene you love in Age of Ultron? Which Age of Ultron is not one of my favorite films, by the way. It is not that great of a film. Because I just didn't like Robert California as the bad guy, frankly. There's a lot more that could have been fixed in that movie. But there's some good scenes. The farmhouse scene where they all go to recollect themselves is a really cool scene. I really did like that. And what the studio told Whedon put it this way. He said, the studio told me, it was like they held up the farmhouse scene and put a gun to its head and said, give us the cave scene with Thor or we're going to shoot the farmhouse scene in the head. You're not going to get your precious farmhouse scene unless we get the weird Thor and the water scene, you know, whatever. So there's an example in where Marvel or even the studio can mess things up. But this is especially prevalent in DC. Like in Batman v Superman, it's clear. It's the weird. You have to shoehorn in the Justice League and set up eventually evil Superman with the flashback dream time travel sequence that doesn't make any sense that no one's thinking about anymore. Let directors do their job, studios. Let them make a good movie, and then the money will come in to make other good movies. You guys might know how to sell art, to sell movies, but you usually don't know how to make them, frankly. That's all I will say there. So I just needed to get that off my chest. I hope that you all would appreciate that. I think maybe for an extra bonus this week, I didn't have time for it in this episode, but you know, for a bonus, I'll include it this week for my premium subscribers. I'm going to list my top five favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. Love to hear what you think if you disagree with them. I'll put those up on the podcast later. If you want to hear that and other great extra interviews and resources that I have this week, do go to TrentHornPodcast.com. That's TrentHornPodcast.com. Hope you enjoyed that. And maybe you're counting down like I am to find out Avengers 4. When is that going to come out and get tickets there? Hope you enjoyed the Free For All Friday. And thanks again for your support, both as listening, praying for the podcast, and for the premium subscribers. Without you, this podcast would not be possible. Stay tuned, and I look forward to speaking with you next week. We've got a great interview lined up and other great episodes here on the Council of Trent Podcast. I am Trent Horn. I hope you have a blessed day. We'll
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.